All right. So we are holding on Chaf Ches Amud Aleph by the two dots, about 10 lines from the top. We said in the Mishnah, we said that you're supposed to eat the Bechor within a year. We discussed yesterday based on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, if it's a Tam, then within a year of when it's able to be brought as a Korban, namely when it turns 8 days old, if it's a Baal Mum, a year from when it's born. Anyway, the Mishnah had said, notably mum b'sechnasay, that if a mum develops in the animal while within its first year, rashay l'chaim kodyud beis chodesh, then you're allowed to keep it for the entire 12 months. You have till the end of 12 months, and then the Mishnah had continued la'acha yud beis chodesh or la'acha shnasay, different year stories over here. If after the year, you're only allowed to keep it up to 30 days. So we have to figure out what
after the year
from, that's what we have to wrap from when it's born. But we have to figure out how do those two things mesh together?
L'chaima means duration.
L'chaima means to keep it around, right? To keep it around. So we have a question. Hey Chikoma, what does the Mishnah mean? Does it mean that if the mum developed while the animal is under a year old, then it means that you're allowed to keep it until the end of the 12 months, plus on top of that, you're actually allowed to keep it an extra 30 days beyond that. In other words, let's say, for example, so the animal was, let's say, 3 or 4 months old and developed a mum. Are we saying that you have not just until it's a year old, but you have until a month after that to shecht it? Maybe what the Mishnah, in other words, is it saying that you have 12 months plus another 30 days? If the mum develops sometime in the middle of the year, then you're only allowed to keep it around for 12 months and no more than that. The deadline is 12 months. But when the Mishnah mentions 30 days, it means v'heicha d'noel by acha shnasay, means if the mum first only develops when the animal is over a year old, ein rasher l'kaim elashloshim, then you're allowed to keep it only up to 30 days. So what is it? Is it the 30 days always goes at the end of the 12 months, and so you have an extra month, or does it mean that you have two different deadlines? If the mum develops within the first year, then you have till the end of the year to do something with it, and if to shecht it and to eat it. And if it first develops after the year, any time after its first birthday, then you have 30 days. So what is it?
So during the year, we never say that it's 30 days after the development of the moon.
No. We know for sure it means that you have,
always 12 months.
You always have until the end of 12 months. But the question is, does it mean, the first possibility would mean that you have not only 12 months, but you have 13 months. If the mum develops sometime, they have an extra 30 days.
12 months.
Or does it mean 12 months? It means 12 months to 30 days is a separate case if you have. It came to its first birthday. It was still a tam. So there being no base mikdash now, you can't shecht it. Now you're waiting. Eventually it develops a mum. And then you have 30 days from when the mum develops. So what is it? So Toshma, we'll prove from a b'raisa. Tanya, b'chor b'zman azeh. The b'raisa says, if a b'chor nowadays, when there's no base mikdash, before it becomes suitable to be shown to a chacham, which means Rashi says it means that no mum developed in it yet. You're allowed to keep it around even 2 or 3 years. Now, what does that mean? You're allowed to on the face of it. What else can you do? Obviously, if it has no mum, you can't do anything with it. So Rabbeinu Gershom has an explanation that Rashoi means something like chayav, you're obligated to keep it as long as necessary until it develops the mum. This would be the Kohen, because as we learned from the Mishnah, Yisrael gives it to him after 30 or 50 days, and at that point it's the Kohen's responsibility.
According to this question.
So when we're saying that until it's suitable to show to a chacham, you can keep it 2 or 3 years. So again, Rabbeinu Gershom explains that rashoi doesn't mean you could, doesn't mean it's optional, because you have no choice. You have to keep it for that long because you have to keep it till it develops a womb. So he understands rashoi as meaning you're required to. Tosfos, on the other hand, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. So Tosfos says actually maybe what it means is now you have other kodshim. You have a Gemara, which we learned in Avodah Zarah, that says that if nowadays somebody is makdish, an animal of kodshim, and there's no base mikdash to bring it, and you have the problem that He may be over on the mitzvahs that you do with kodshim. He may shear it. He may work with it. He may have anah from it or whatever. So therefore, the din is that noyel jealous for now be made some allow that you put it in a room, you lock the door, and you leave it there. After the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, nowadays, a person designates an animal as an oil or a shlomim or what have you. So then what we do is, noel jealous but for now be mace the me'alah. So therefore, Tosfos says, maybe what the Gemara means over here is you're not required to do that. You can keep this b'chor around because you didn't make it hektish. It became hektish automatically when it was born. So maybe therefore the Gemara is saying, maybe the Braisa is saying, Rashoi, you're allowed to keep it for even 2 or 3 years. We're not worried that you're going to end up working with it. You're not required to put it in a room like that. Okay, Tosfos ends up with a different explanation, though, that Adshel and Nudel HaRoitzel HaChacham does not necessarily mean, like Rashi, that it didn't develop a mum. It could even be it did develop a mum, but you don't have a chance to bring it to a Chacham to check it because the Chacham lives far away, let's say. So the Nudel HaRoitzel HaChacham means it's not convenient to bring it to the Chacham, so you're even allowed to keep it around for 2 or 3 years, whatever. Fine. Umishin Nudel HaRoitzel HaChacham, once there comes a point when it is suitable to be brought to the Chacham, again, according to Rashi, it developed a mum. According to Tosfos, there is a Chacham conveniently nearby. Well, yeah. Okay, then, Nudel Mum B'Seshnal. So then, continues the Braisa, if a mum develops within the first year, Rashoi L'Kaima Kol Shnei Masa Chodesh, then you're allowed to keep it for until the end of the 12 months, until you have till the animal's first birthday to do something with it, to show it to the Chacham, and then shecht it, and the Kohen can eat it. Achashnasa, but if the mum develops only after the animal is a year old, Ein Rashoi L'Kaima Afilu Yom Echad Afilu Shah Achad, technically then you shouldn't be allowed to keep it around even for 1 day or even for 1 hour. You should, as soon as the Chacham tells you that it's a mum right there on the spot, you should be expected to shecht it. However, continues the Braisa, Avo Mepnei Hashavas Aveda Labailim, however, for the sake of Hashavas Aveda, for the sake of returning a lost object to the owner, Rashi understands the owner over here being the Kohen, meaning, in other words, that if you were to shecht it right there on the spot and there's no Kohen available, let's say, then the meat is going to spoil. So therefore we don't require him to do that. Omru, the Chacham said, Rashoi L'Kaima Shloshim Yom, that he's allowed to keep it for 30 days. So then if he finds a Kohen within those 30 days, good. If not, Rashi says, fine, at that point, he does have to shecht it. According to Rashi, we're talking about the Yisrael, the original owner, still has the animal in his possession. Because we're saying after 30 or 50 days, you could give it to the Kohen, but you're not required to. So if he finds a Kohen during the first 30 days, then good. During the 30 days after the mum develops, good. If not, Rashi says what he should do is shecht it and salt the meat, and eventually so it doesn't spoil, and eventually a Kohen will show up. But this way, at least you're salting it so it doesn't spoil. So this way you can keep it long term. Tosfos explains differently. Tosfos says we're not talking about that it's in the Yisrael's possession still. We're talking about the Kohen has it in his possession. However, if we made him shecht it as soon as the Chacham declares that it has a mum, then he might lose out because he may not need meat right now. So therefore, the Chachamim granted him 30 days to see it this way. During the 30 days, he can make arrangements that he'll need meat for some purpose or other. And then, yeah. As opposed to, Tosfos says, the Yisrael, there's no limit. If there's no Kohen, Tosfos learns that he keeps it indefinitely until a Kohen. Not like Rashi says that after 30 days he can shecht it and salt the meat. No, Tosfos learns that he keeps it indefinitely. Anyway, the point is, the Braisa seems to be implying, therefore, that 30 days is... That there are two different things. You have up to 12 months if the mum developed within the year, and another 30 days if the mum developed after the year. So that would answer our question, and that would mean, in other words, that this is the second possibility that we said. So if the mum develops before its first birthday, then you have till its first birthday to do something with it. And if the mum develops after the first birthday, then you have then technically you should really not be granted any time at all. But the Chacham gave you a break and gave you 30 days.
Normally, after the first birthday, still.
Well, it might. It could still be a tam if it's a tam. And nowadays, there's no Beis Mikdash. There's nothing you can do with it. You can't shecht it. You can't shecht it as long as it's a tam. In the time of the Beis Mikdash, you should be bringing it to the carbon before its first birthday.
Before the first birthday.
Yeah.
So But today, it doesn't change anything, whether it's before.
No, that's the point. In other words, we're saying that if the moon develops within its first year, you still have, we learned yesterday, Shana Bashana, or we learned yesterday from Shana Bashana, that you're supposed to still eat it, or at least shecht it within its first year. Mind you, in Rashi's scenario over here, where you're salting away the meat, it's not necessarily getting eaten within the first year, but at least you're shechting it within the first year. So that's at least something.
You can keep the meat, but not you, Yisrael,
can't eat it. You have to give it to the kohen. The point is that, in other words, the point of Rashi, the scenario is it. The scenario is there's no kohen around. If you only have 30 days once the animal has reached its first birthday, and only then it develops a womb. If you're going to shech the animal right away, the kohen is going to lose out because by the time the kohen comes, the meat is going to be spoiled.
Right.
Therefore, we give you up to 30 days, and if the kohen still hasn't shown up within 30 days, then shech the meat and salt it away and keep it, and then hold on to it until the kohen comes. According to Tosfos, you don't even have that leeway. You just keep it indefinitely, and you keep on feeding it and taking care of it and whatever alive, until the kohen is available. Anyway, the point is that the braisa seems to be implying, therefore, that you have 30 days after the 12 months.
And the Mishnah did not.
The Mishnah didn't say clearly. The Mishnah had said that you have 12 months. And then the Mishnah had said, we didn't understand whether that meant that you actually have until 1 month after its birthday.
Anyway,
the Mishnah had said that after 30 days, you're only allowed to keep it up to 30 days. But does that mean that? So that was the question we had. Did it mean that if so let's give date. The animal was born, let's say, in the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah that typically sheep and goats usually conceive around Adar Nissan time and they give birth of Elul time. So let's say, for example, we're talking about, let's say, a sheep that was born in Av.
Five months.
So let's say you have this sheep that was born, let's say it was born Tuba'av. So you have until Tuba'av a year later, you're supposed to do something with it. Again, so if it's Mikdash, no problem. If it's a Tam, you can bring in a carbon during that year and you're supposed to do that. There's no basic Mikdash. So we said, does the Mishnah mean that if, let's say, a mum developed it in Tishrei or Cheshvan or what have you, then you have until Tuba'av, you have a long time you can wait before you have to figure out what you're going to do with it, that you're going to show it to, you're going to have time to show it to a chacham, have him say that it's a mum, and actually the Mishnah might be saying that even after Tuba'av, even after its first birthday, you have another month, you have another 30 days to work with until the 15th of Elul. Or does the Mishnah mean that there's two separate scenarios? In the first scenario that we said, you have only until Tuba'av, not even a day later. And in the second scenario, where let's say Tuba'av came and went, it still doesn't have a mum. Now let's say the following Elul, the following Tishrei, or what have you, it developed a mum. Now from there you have 30 days. So the Braisa seems to come down on the second side of it. Still, Vadayin Tiboyuli, but
to add that
you have 30 days if the moon didn't develop within a year. The problem with that is that we're still not sure, Vadayin Tiboyuli, Shloshinyam Acha Shnasa or Yom Kodim Shnasa. When we say 30 days, though, there's still two ways of understanding the Braisa. You could understand that it means that it's talking about not an additional 30 days, but it's Shloshim Yom Achashnasa. Are you given the 30 days? No, we said before, it definitely doesn't mean you have till the animal is 13 months old. But does it mean only if the mum developed after it's a year old, then you have the 30 days? Then the Braisa is saying, technically, you shouldn't have any time at all, but we're going to give you a grace period of 30 days. Or maybe what the Braisa means is that if the mum develops within the year, then you only have 30 days. That in principle, once a mum, in other words, is the Braisa saying once a mum develops, really you should be shechting it right there on the spot as soon as the chacham says as mutter. But we'll give you 30 days. Does that apply only when the animal is over a year old, or does it apply even when the animal is under a year old?
So another way to formulate this is to say the 30 days are either connected to the moon or to the year.
Yeah.
Basically.
I guess, that would be a good way of saying it, yeah.
Okay.
That's the question. Toshma, another Bryce says, no mum bachamisha also yom b'seichin also. If a mum develops 15, if a mum develops 15 days within the year, which the pashtus means 15 days before the end of the year. So in our scenario, let's say erev shchodesh of. Before the year is up, before the Yochanan year, mashlimin lechamisha also yom achashnato. Then we allow him to finish up 15 days after the year. In other words, we have 30 days from when the mum came about, which in this case was erev shchodesh of. Let's say, so we give him till erev shchodesh of. We give him another month, even though by that point the animal is a year and 2 weeks old. So now we see that the 30 days that the Mishnah is talking about, and the Braita is talking about, is that like this. If the mum develops within the year, we don't give him any extra time beyond the end of the year. If the mum develops more than 30 days before the end of the year, we don't give him any extra leeway beyond the end of the year. In other words, it's not like we assumed originally that if the mum develops when the animal is 2 or 3 or 4 months old, that we're saying we give him until the end of the year. No, that's not what it is. It means that once the mum develops, we always give him only 30 days. If the mum develops way back when the animal is much younger, then the fact is you have shana b'shana, you're allowed to keep it for up to a year. Therefore, you have till Tu B'Av in our case. If, let's say, which is exactly when it's exactly a year old. If the mum develops after the year or near his year, meaning after Tu B'Av, or near the end of the year, within a month before Tu B'Av, then we only give him 30 days from when that mum develops. That's what it means. So in our scenario, the animal was born Tu B'Av. So now, if the following year the mum first develops, let's say any time from Kesvav Tammuz and on, if let's say it develops on Shiva after the Tammuz, then you only give him until the 17th of Av. If it develops your Shchodesh,
before his year is complete, we let him complete the year.
We don't give him any extra beyond the year unless that would make less than 30 days from when the mum develops.
Right. If within 30 days of the end of each year, then
we add whatever is needed to complete 30 days from when the mum came. And similarly, if the mum develops after the year is up, we also give him a full 30 days. Right. That's what it means.
It never goes beyond the 30 months, basically.
It could, because if it comes its first birthday, and it comes its second birthday, and it comes its third birthday, and it still hasn't developed a mum, there's still nothing you can do with it. The fact is, there's no basic method. She still can't check it till it has a mum.
You can give the 30 days and say even several years after the...
Yeah, however old it is. I mean, it could end up dying of old age, but whatever it is. When it develops a mum, then 30 days kick in. In other words, what it comes down to is you have until the animal is 12 months, or until the animal is 12 months old, or 30 days from when the mum developed, whichever one is later.
Within the year, we never get to 30 days.
If the animal is less than 11 months old, you don't need 30 days, right? You have as much time.
From the beginning of the
12 months on, right? That then till indefinitely. So then you have if it's within the 12th month itself, then part of the 30 days is still before its first birthday, and the remainder of it is after that. And if it's after its first birthday, then you have 30 days from then, right? Not in depth. Well, you have 30 days from when the mum develops, right? Okay. So the Gemara says, so now that we have the Braisis, then we've clarified what our Mishnah means. When our Mishnah means says 12 months and then it says 30 days, doesn't mean you always get a grace period of 30 days after the 12 months. It means that you have a grace period after the mum develops, if the mum develops any time from the beginning of the 12th month onward. And not necessarily is that all a grace period, because some of it may actually be the statutory time that you have till 12 months anyway, and then you have the extra days that are necessary to make it.
30 days before the 12 months.
Well, you don't need it, right? In other words, because you have till the end of the 12 months.
You get it, but you don't.
Well, yeah, okay, if you want to put it that way, fine. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, "Nefayel Rav Elazar." This brisa and now our understanding of the halacha supports what Rav Elazar says. De'amar Rav Elazar, noisnim l'shloshim yom mishal shenolad b'mum, because Rav Elazar says just that we give the animal 30, that we give the owner whatever, we give the kohen 30 days from when the mum develops. During that's exactly what we said. In other words, we give him 30 days, and the expectation is during that time he's expected to find a chacham to declare that it's a mum kavua and to find a kohen, etc. Okay. Ikadamri, now there's another version of what Rabbi Elazar said. Amar Rabbi Elazar, minayin l'b'chor shenolad b'mum b'sech shnata shenoysen l'shloshim yem achas shnata. So according to a second version, Rabbi Elazar said, no, how do we know that if a b'chor developed a mum within the year, that we give him 30 days after the year, which would be more like our first understanding, that we always give him that in other words, we give him up to 13 months. Shenemar, he says, because the pasuk says, "Lifnei Hashem alekachal techlenu shana b'shana." Again, the same pasuk we quoted before. Before Hashem, you should eat the b'chor, and we said before this refers to a tam and to a balmum. You should eat it shana b'shana, year in year. Now, yesterday we said we had the limud that we said what does it mean year in year? It means when you have one year intersecting with another year, namely the year in which the year of the animal's age intersecting with the calendar year. But here, Rabbi Elazar is darshaning it differently. Ezein yomin hachashuvim shana. Where do you what does it mean? How many days do you need to be considered a year for certain purposes? Heve emet elu shloshim yom. That would be 30 days. In various cases in halacha, we have a concept called the same way as we say miktas hayom kekolai. The same way we say miktas hashana kekolai. A part of a year can be counted like a full year. Yeah, then you have months. You have actually we have it. We do that every time we count. Every time we count a year. Every time we say that it's year 5779 or whatever year it is, we're doing that in effect. Because what are we counting from? What do we begin the year one with? We begin the year one with the. It begins with Rosh Hashanah, obviously, but the Rosh Hashanah it begins with is not the Rosh Hashanah Adam is created. The way we do it nowadays is we count from almost a year. We count from a year before Adam was created. Why? Because Ma'aseh Bereishis began on Chaf Hei Elul, and so therefore those 6 days, those 5 days from Chaf Hei to Chaf Tes Elul have to belong to a year. So we call that year one, even though there's only 5 real days of it, because the days before it didn't exist. So there is a concept called Yom. It's not the only case. But the thing is, now you have more to the point as far as practical halacha. You have an issue with if you plant a if you plant a tree a certain amount of time before Rosh Hashanah, how long before Rosh Hashanah do you need to plant it such that it'll A, have time to take root, and B, that once it's taken root, it'll be considered that it's grown enough in that year that can be considered the first year of the tree, which is relevant to the halachas of Orla and so forth. Yeah, we learned it in Rosh Hashanah years back then. So the answer is, so you have different opinions in the Gemara over there. You also have different opinions how long it takes the tree to take root. The halacha is we assume it takes 2 weeks for the tree to take root, and then 30 days in a year is considered a year. The result of it being that if a person plants a tree any time from Tuba Av or earlier, then that the remainder of that year counts as its first year. And then you only need two more years. So you have half of Av and all, so 14 days of Av, actually, Zion Av is the latest you can plant or whatever. It's 14 days of Av and, you need 15 days of Av and 29 of Elul to make 44. So yeah, if you plant any time from 15th of Av and earlier.
There's always 44 days from Tuba up to...
Well, yeah, because you always have, Av is always 30 days and Elul is always 29 days nowadays anyway, when we have the fixed calendar. So yeah. Anyway, the point is that 30 days count as a year according to the maximum opinion. I mean, you have other opinions in the Gemara there that allow lesser amounts of time, but everybody agrees that 30 days can be considered a year. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar says, by the same logic over here, if the pasuk is telling you that you can eat the b'chor shana bishana, that implies that you have 2 years to work with. So you have one which is a full year from when the animal is born until its first birthday, and then another 30 days in the next year, which can be considered for certain purposes in halacha, can be considered another year. However, the Gemara says, "Maybe we have a contradiction to that because we just said in the Braisa, if the mum developed within 15 days before the end of its year, then we fill in and we grant him an extra 15 days after the year, implying hashlama ein. So we allow him to fill up the 30 days. We give him the complement of the 30 days, but mi'avaloi, but we don't give him a full 30 days after the first birthday. Kyufta de Rabbalaza. That's a contradiction of the second version of Rabbalaza." Statement, yeah, Kyokta, that's a clear contradiction.
The year begins.
Rabbi Elazar had said that regardless, if the animal was born, let's say, Tesvav of, like we were saying before, Rabbi Elazar is saying if it develops a mum within its first year, we always give it till the end of 13 months. We will give it in that case, in other words, until Tesvav Elul. However, the Braise is saying that, no, when do you give them 30 days? If, let's say, in our scenario, a mum developed Erevish Chodesh Av 15 days before its first birthday, then you give them an extra 15 days after its first birthday. So you give them until Rosh Chodesh Av. He says you always give them 30 days. Yeah, so that's a contradiction. Yeah, so two of those, so that's a contradiction. So the halacha is not like that second version of Rabbi Elazar's statement, but the halacha is like the first opinion, is like the first version that we always give them 30 days after the mum was developed, after the mum developed, right?
Within the first
within the first year, you don't really need 30 days after the end of the year anyway, but if it's any time from the beginning of the 12th month onward, then you have 30 days. Yeah. Okay. And that's the halacha. Mishnah says, "Hashoychet et habachor." Somebody shechted a bachor umare es mumoi. Now what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to check the mum and have the chacham certify that it's a mum kavua before you shecht the animal. Here he did it backwards. He shechted the bachor and then he showed the mum to a chacham, and it turns out to be a mum kavua.
How can you show a mum after he's dead?
Well, that's what we have to figure out. That's what we have to figure out. Rabbi Yehuda master. Rabbi Yehuda says, okay, you can be master of the meat. Look, I mean, it has a mum, so therefore, obviously, you know, so therefore it's mutter. Rabbi Meir says, no. Since it was shechted not based on being having looked at by a mumcha literally means an expert, but it means somebody, the mum, yeah.
So,
yes, since you didn't have a mumcha check it beforehand to certify that, right. Osir, so therefore, Rabbi Meir says the meat of it is osir, for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. Continues the Mishnah. Misha einim mumcha. If a person is not a mumcha, which means, so basically mumcha for this purpose means that he doesn't have, mumcha for this purpose basically means that he doesn't have smicha. You actually have the person distinguish a little bit between mumcha, which just means the person is a known expert, versus mumcha the based in, which means the based in is certified him as being an expert. But whatever, the point is, suppose a person is not a mumcha, v'roya es habachor, so then he looked at a bachor and said that, yes, this is a mumkavua, v'nishchat alpiv, and then it was shechted based on his statement, and it turns out that he's not a mumcha. So you weren't allowed to do that. So therefore, right, harezi yikavur, so the din is you have to bury the meat, it's also b'hana, v'yishalem mibesei, and this guy who said that it's kosher when he didn't have the right to do that, not being a mumcha, he has to pay out of his own pocket to the owner for having deprived him.
So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be...
So according to Rabbi Yehuda, fine, it's not necessarily too late. You could show it to an actual mumcha after the fact. Although we'll see in the Gemara that even Rabbi Yehuda will distinguish between different kinds of mumcha. There's some kinds of it depends what kind of
mumcha.
Yeah, that's what we're gonna see. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Omar Rava Baba Chana. Bedukin Shaba'ayin, if the animal has a mum in Dukin Shaba'ayin, which we've learned that term before, it means Rashi here and in pretty much all the other places, translates it as a cataract. Rashi uses the expression Tela, which is the French word for a cataract.
What's it called?
Tela, I don't know, whatever. Okay, in one place earlier in our Masechta, Rashi explained that Dukin Shaba'ayin might mean the eyelids. Anyway. Whatever it is, if the mum is there, the kula alma le tzigid aser, everybody will know there is no machlokas. Even Rabbi Yehuda will agree the animal is aser if you only show it to a mumcha after it's shechted. Mipnei shehin mishtanim, because such kinds of mumim can change. They can look different after the mumim with the eye can look different after the animal's dead. So it might have not looked like a mum. So it's possible had the mumcha looked at it while it was alive, it might have looked not like a mum kavur. It might have looked to his practiced eye like a mum over, like something temporary which will go away. And now that the animal is dead, it looks like a mum kavur. And therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that's no good. The machlokas rather is about mumim in other parts of the body. For example, Rashi gives an example. Let's say, for example, there's a split in the ear, which later on in the sixth parak, when we learn about all the mumim, we'll learn that that's considered a mum, provided the split is a certain depth, whatever.
When you have a split that's natural or a split?
No, we're talking about a split. We're talking about, we'll see over there. You have a notch in it, like a notch that there's...
There are women's first ear.
fine, that's in the source part of the year. We're not talking about that. Mainly we're talking about the cartilage. But we'll get to it in the sixth paragraph. We'll talk all about the womb investigation. Okay. So let's say that you have a womb elsewhere on the body, which doesn't necessarily tend to change its appearance after the animal's dead. So the argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir is only with mumim in other parts of the body. Rabbi Meir says we're going to make a gzera and after with any mum anywhere on the body because it may be confused with dukin shabayin. If you allow him to eat it when it was checked by a mumcha after the animal was shechted, and you allow him to eat it with other mumim in the goof, people are not going to realize and people are going to think the same thing would apply to mumim in the eyes. Rabbi Yehuda Sabalegas written mumim shabagoof after dukin shabayin. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that you have to make such a gzera.
He says
that people are not going to mix up one with the other, right? Okay, so Tani Nami Hachi, we learned similarly in a Braisa. Hashoichet as a bechor to mares mum. If a person first shechted a bechor and only then he showed the mum to a chacham, Rabbi Yehuda, remember Dukin Shabayin Aser, Mipnei Shehin Mishtanin. Rabbi Yehuda says the Dukin Shabayin is Aser because they tend to change after the animal dead. The mumin shabu guf mutter, mipnei shein mishtanin. With mumin on the guf, it's mutter because they don't tend to change. Reb Meir oimer, echad zeh ve'echad zeh osim, mipnei shein mishtanin. Reb Meir says, either way, it's also because they tend to change. What do you mean? Mipnei shein mishtanin, sakur daida. What do you mean? Because they change. Mumin shabu guf mi mishtanin. We just established that mumin on elsewhere on the body, for example, on the ears, don't change. So what is Reb Meir saying? They all change. Ella, no. What he means is mipnei hamishtanin. He makes a gzera because you have the kind that change, for example, duk and shabayin, and therefore he applies this din also to ones that don't change, because they may be easily confused. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tosfos discusses over here, who is the halacha like? Now, we know generally, when Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda argue, usually the halacha is like Reb Yehuda. However, we have a concept in a number of places in Shas called halacha ki Reb Meir b'gzeiroisa. When Reb Meir is saying that something is also on the grounds of a gzeira, then the halacha is like it. On the other hand, when he holds, in other words, that we make a gzeira, because you might confuse one thing with another. Okay. Generally speaking, the halacha is like him in that. On the other hand, over here, the Gemara in a few lines from now calls this a knas, calls this that Reb Meir penalizes. Person. Now it's not necessarily exact. So that might mean the halacha might be him in his gzeirus and not in his knosis. So Tosfos discusses that, and Tosfos says it's a different kind of thing. So Tosfos learns therefore that the halacha must be for that and for a few other reasons that the halacha must be like Rabbi Yehuda. That it's only also if it was Duk and Shabayim, it would be mutter if it was other ones.
Only
for
its not reason or for other reasons?
No, other reasons, Tosfos also says, and Kirav Yehuda. Tosfos says that the continuation of the discussion in the Gemara seems to follow Rabbi Yehuda. Also, the Gemara asks, do we have a stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir? So therefore, for all those reasons, Tosfos says, apparently the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. And there are a couple of the Ga'onim who pass in that way as well. That the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, so it's only by Duk and Shabayin and not the other ones. On the other hand, most of the Rishonim and a number of the Ga'onim as well, including the Bahag, pass in like Rabbi Meir, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So the majority opinion is that the halacha is like Reb Meir, and therefore it doesn't matter what kind of mum we're talking about. Either way, you shechted the animal, and only then you showed the mum, it's too late. Whether it's duk and shabayin, which do change, or whether it's a different kind of mum that doesn't change. One point that Amban brings to bear in this, first of all, it's not necessarily correct that when we say that halacha could have Meir b'gzeiroisa does not apply to his knosis. But second of all, also,
that's not necessarily a reason, but also
that Amban points out that the question is, when the Gemara is discussing soon about the knas on it, does the knas apply whether it's the owner of the animal, let's say the Kohen himself, that shechted it, or what if it's someone else that shechted it for him? Let's say a Kohen had this bechor that was given to him by the Yisrael after 30 or 50 days or whatever. Somebody else went and shechted it and then showed it to a mumcha. Or are we going to penalize and say that it's also for the Kohen who was the owner of the animal to eat it or not? if we say, one way of looking at it is that a mayor would say, since there's the concern over here that one kind of moon may be confused with the other, so we don't really care who shifted it, fine, the Kohen himself didn't do anything wrong, but nevertheless, in that case, the Ramban says it's not necessarily really a knaf. The Gemara may be using the word knaf, but it's meant more in a looser sense.
So why would we penalize it if someone else did this?
Because we would say that, because we're saying we have a gzera over here. In other words, even though the Gemara soon calls it a knaf, the Ramban learns not necessarily is it really a knaf, as in we're penalizing someone who did something wrong. It may be more in the nature of a gzera. And in that case, Allah could have made a gzera. So the other way of looking at it is that maybe we wouldn't penalize him in that case, because after all, he didn't do it. Anyway, the Gemara says, Omer of Nachmi, Machnisim Nami Deita. Actually, we have, from our Mishnah alone, we don't even need the Braisa to tell us that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are not arguing about Duk and Shabbai, and they're only arguing about Mumim and other areas of the body. We can see it from our Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says, Rabbi Meir Omer, Hoyov and Nishchat Shalayapi Mumcha. Rabbi Meir had said, because it was shechted not based on a Mumcha, because you didn't check with a Mumcha first, Osir. So it's author implying, Shmamina Knossa Kokonis Reb Meir, implying that Reb Meir considers it a knas. He's going to say there's nothing wrong with it, except there's no possibility that the mum changed after death. The only problem is that you didn't do the right thing, that you didn't show it to a mumcha before it was shechted like you're supposed to. So if it was Drukin Shabbayin, then Reb Meir shouldn't say, Ho Vanishkat Shalayapi Mumcha, he should say, Ho L'mashtanim. Because it changed, because it could change, and therefore the mumcha himself may make the wrong decision. The fact that he doesn't do that implies that he would agree that Duk and Shabbayin, he knows that he and Rabbi Yehuda are not arguing that. They're only arguing about other mumim, where there's no possibility of them changing their appearance after death. And still, the mayor says it's also because of his zeh, or because of his knas, as the case may be. Mom, you know that proves it. Okay. So now we have a question within that. When we said that, so what did we say? We said Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda are not arguing about Duk and Shabbayin because we said they can change their appearance. But then we said other mumim don't change their appearance, but still Reb Meir is making a gzeira because he may confuse one kind with the other. The question is, Mipnei Mishtanin, do we say that Reb Meir is making a gzeira because you might confuse one type of mum, which doesn't change, with the other type, namely mumim in the eye and Duk and Shabbayin, which change? And we would say v'chulu mishtani, any mum in Duk and Shabbayin, any mum in Duk and Shabbayin, a cataract or a eyelid, whatever, are subject to change. Or yidoma ikad mishtani, the ikad dolei mishtani, or maybe the mayor, maybe the mayor actually means some of them change, some of them don't.
Duk and Shabbayin, it can be the pupil, or it could be the
No, so the two possibilities are, it means either a cataract, either a cataract on the lens of the eye, or it means the eyelid itself, for example, a split or a notch or whatever in the eyelid.
So the eyelid or the lens.
Right. Okay. So what are we saying that b'chulu mishtani, are we saying all mumim involving Duk and Shabbayin are subject to change, and therefore what goes around other ones in the body because of that, according to the mayor? Or maybe even within Duk and Shabbayin themselves, some of them change and some of them don't. What's the practical difference? Either way, according to the mayor, the animal is also. And the fact of the matter is, anyway, even according to the Yehuda, we don't really know which ones are likely to change and which ones are not. So what's the practical difference of the question? The answer is lachushi sabi. The nafkamina would be to contradict witnesses. Suppose that. So, okay, you shechted the animal. You didn't check with a mumcha first. Now you have, now the mumcha comes and checks it after it was shechted and says it's a mumcha war. We have edim that can testify that it looked the same way when it was alive. So the question, in other words, is really according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Meir, it's not really relevant because he's making a gzeira either way. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, if we say, if you say that any mum in Duk and Shabbayin necessarily is going to change its appearance after death, if we assume that all of them will, then the witnesses are obviously liars. Even Rabbi Yehuda, therefore, will say that the animal is also. Because, yes, the mumcha checked it now. He said it looks like a mumcha bua. We have edim that say that it looks the same as it did when it's alive. But if we assume that all mumim in Duk and Shabbayin are going to change, then the edim are obviously false edim. And therefore...
Wow.
Because how could they be saying it didn't change when we know that all ones that are Duk and Shabbayin change?
Well, and they change, but later in the future.
No, we said, no, between when the animal's alive and when it's dead. the amit ikka de mishtani, the ikka de le mishtani. But if you say that some mumim and dukin shavayim change, some don't, some chinin alayu, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, at least we should be able to be soimach on them. Okay, they say the reason why Rabbi Yehuda would ask a dukin shavayim is because they could change. But if we have edim that say that didn't change, then we should be able to rely on them. My, so what's the din in that case? Toshma, the Amr Rabbi Baba Chana, Sochli Rabbi Yoshia de Minusha. So Rabbi Baba Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, and Shittim Kubetis to add, that Rabbi Yoshia from Usha told me as follows. He says, Boi va'arecha bedukin chein mishtanim. Come and let me show you and let me teach you that about mumim in dukin shva'ayin that they change. Now, the fact that he says, come and let me show you,
right,
implying that there's some kind that they have to be shown. They're not always, some of them are changeable, some are not. Miklal di ikad bishtani, di ikad bishtani. So therefore, that shows that some of them are changeable and some of them are not. And that's what Rabbi Yoshia is telling him, come, I'll show you the ones that change, implying that there are other kinds that don't change. So therefore, yes, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you had edim that this is the particular type that didn't change, and the mumcha also says it looks like a mum kavua, then you're good. Then you're good. And again, if we say as Tosfos says that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, then it means in that case you'd be good. If you say like most of the Rishonim and as is brought in Shulchan Aruch, the halacha is like a mayor, then it's a moot point anyway because the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda.
Because all mumim change,
because he makes a gzera that we're not going to allow it with any mum because some mumim change and therefore you're likely to confuse one with the other, right? Okay. Fine. Then we said, the Mishnah continued,
if somebody
is really
would be, so even if according to
Rav
Meir, the
agent
come and testify that they never changed.
Yeah, because Rav Meir is making a gzera or knas, as the case may be, right? Obviously we're talking to Rabban. So the difference whether we call it a Zera or a Knas, first of all, that affects the question whether the Allah is like him. But second of all, it also affects the question, again, if you have that you gave the Bechor to the Kohen Reuven, and then Shimon went and shechted the animal and only afterwards shechted the Mumcha. If we say that's a Knas that we're applying to everybody, then Reuven the Kohen is still going to be also to eat it. If we say that the Knas is only on the person who did wrong, then Reuven the Kohen will be allowed to eat it because he didn't do anything wrong. Okay. Fine. Then the Mishnah said,
could make an exception in the case of the Aiden. Aiden is stronger than anything else.
That's true, but nevertheless, Xera is Xera.
It's not stronger than Aiden.
Yeah, it is. When the Chum makes Xera, then it doesn't matter whether they're Aiden or not. The point is, Rav Meir is going to say that because we have some kinds of Mumim that change, therefore, we're never going to allow this because you may confuse it with the types of Mumim that do change. If you're going to be allowed, in this case, to eat it, in another case, where you have a changeable Mumim, then people, yeah. Okay, fine. Then the Mishnah said, Mishain and Mumcha V'ra'as Abachur. We said that if somebody is not a mumcha, he's not an expert at checking mumim, v'ra'as habachor, and then he anyway checks the bachor and declares that something is a mum kavua, v'nishchat apiv, and the bachor is shechted based on his word, and it turns out he's not a mumcha, hareza yikaver. So we said the animal has to be buried because it's also b'ya, v'shalom yibase, and he has to pay out of pocket for it. So Gemara says lema tnan soma for the mayor. Should we say that we have over here a stam mishnah like the mayor? Because you're talking about over here again. You may afterwards check with a real mumcha, and it does come out to be a mum kavua, and nevertheless, your mayor is still saying it's all. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is still saying that it's also as a blanket statement. The answer is not necessarily, because Duma, but Dukin Shabayin, Divrei Hakol. Again, we could say that we're talking about the case where the mum was in Dukin Shabayin, where everybody will agree that those are changeable, even Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore that part of the Mishnah could be according to everybody. So it's not, in other words, the point is it's not necessarily machlokas v'achak stam. If it was machlokas v'achak stam, that we had a stam mishnah like Rav Meir, machlokas v'achak stam, where we had a machlokas Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. And if we had then a mishnah that clearly is like Rav Meir, then it would mean the halacha necessarily is like Rav Meir. That's one of Tosfos' proofs that the halacha is not like Rav Meir, because otherwise, why is the Gemara asking the question?
If the halacha is like Rav Meir,
then why does the mishnah have a problem if we have a stam mishnah like Rav Meir? But if you say the halacha is not like a mayor, then you. Okay. Then the Mishnah continues. Then okay, not the Mishnah continues. Rather, the Gemara says Tana. We learn in a Braisa. Now, we said in the Mishnah that the person, this non-mumcha who checked it.
When you say tashma, it's really what, right?
Tashma, it means we're going to bring some kind of proof. I mean, here it doesn't say tashma, anyway, it says tashma. But yeah, tashma means come and hear. It can be any kind, it can be a proof from some greater authority.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it'll be from a Mishnah or a Braisa. Sometimes it'll even be from a Pasuk.
Not a
Braisa. Usually it'll be from a Mishnah or a Braisa. Sometimes it can be from a Pasuk, which is also a higher authority. Once in a while it'll be from a story or a statement or whatever of Amidoyim from which we see a clear halacha.
So it can be either as or stronger than a Mishnah, basically. If it's a Pasuk.
Kind of, yeah. We learn in a Braisa, Kshuma Shalom. Now, this non-mumcha who checked the animal and therefore caused the owner, the Kohen, a loss, how much did he pay? Now, not necessarily should we say that he has to pay the whole thing. Rashi points out, it's Momenam Mutal B'Sopek. Because on the one hand, yes, he checked it, and therefore it, and then, and
he,
well,
if he didn't
well, know he was. It, well, one second. No, he knows whether he's a mumcha or not, but the point is...
No.
The point... One second. Okay, so one second. Well, the point is, okay, so he should have checked. But anyway, the point is that there's two possibilities over here, right? He could have... like this, he was matzivet, and therefore the guy shechted it, and then it turns out that he was wrong to do that because he's not a mumcha. On the other hand, the fact of the matter is, what if he had brought it to a real mumcha? Maybe the mumcha would have told him it's mutter, and therefore it would have been mutter. Or maybe the mumcha would, or maybe the mumcha would tell him it's not a mum, and then not necessarily is it ever going to develop a mum, right? It might end up dying of old age. So therefore, Rashi learns therefore that what you have here is a situation of mum and a multiple suffix. You have, in effect, over here, you have a suffix. Whether he should owe the entire value of that animal or not. Because it could have been that it really was a mum kavua, and if we had shown it to a mum, he would have said yes, the mum kavua, go shecht it,
and therefore
he's out the entire value of it, or therefore the kohen is now out the entire value of it, which he lost. Or you could say there are other possibilities. You might equally well have brought it to the mum. He would have said, you know what, this is not a mum kavua. You can't shecht it. You're going to have to wait, and he's going to wait and wait and wait, and eventually the animal dies of old age. And then he didn't lose anything because, like this, he couldn't have used it anyway. So Rashi learns that we have a case of mumun amutal b'safik, and we have a concept in a number of places in Shas that mumun amutal b'safik chokin. That when you have the Gemara mentions in a number of places in Shas and Rav Mathia that in particular the opinion of Sumchus that mumun amutal b'safik chokin. That when you have a safik like that, then you divide it 50-50. So Rashi,
it's one-sided
safik. No, it's not a one-sided safik. It's a two-sided safik. Okay, he did wrong by checking it, and then... But the suffix is, what would have happened if he hadn't gotten involved? The Kohen would have brought it to a mumcha. Either the mumcha would have said, it's good, go ahead and check it. Or the mumcha would have said, it's no good, don't check it. And then it might end up never developing a mum. So therefore, Rashi learns that it's the case. The mumcha on multiple suffix. And Sumcha told in a number of places in Shas that Chokin, in that case, you divide it. One second. We'll talk about it in a second. What Tosfos says on that, because after all, the halacha is not like so close. To wait a second. The point is that you're not sure. So therefore, Tana Kshuma Shalem. So when this person, this non mumcha, who checked it and caused it to be checked, when he pays, Mishalem reveal a daka umechta lagasta. If it's a behema daka, a sheep or a goat, he has to pay a quarter of its value. And if it's a behema gasa, an ox, he has to pay half its value. Now, the reason why it doesn't go beyond half, we just said. Rashi says because momen on multiple suffix. Tosfos says that's not the reason, because that's this concept of momen on multiple suffix token is only according to Sumchus.
And
the halacha is not like Sumchus. The halacha is not like Sumchus. So Tosfos just said, okay, it's a kind of Sumchus. Because the halacha is like the chacham, that moti machaveh lo varayim. So therefore, Tosfos says no. It's a tekanas chachamim over here. It's a tekanas chachamim. But still, after all, Tosfos says, and even if you know that it's a mum, after all, what if the mumcha hadn't been available and so forth? So yeah. And so the chacham figured out that look, the fact of the matter is you have a suffix. It hasn't been mutter yet. Therefore, the chacham decided that the maximum it can be worth is half its value. Because, in other words, even if hypothetically you were to sell it to somebody, he wouldn't be willing to pay more than half its value because he knows he's taking a chance. It might become mutter, it might not. Okay. Anyway, so whatever it is, so why is it, so the maximum is a half. So why you're paying only a quarter if it's a behemadaka, my time, I'm going to pop a zehefsin merubah, but zehefsin mort. The reason is because in one case you have a large loss, and in the other case you have a small loss. A large animal is worth a lot more, therefore you have to pay more. A small animal is worth less, so therefore you pay less. The question is still, why are you doing a quarter versus a half? Ihachil afunk seder l'shalom. Still, you should be doing proportionate to the amount of the loss. Fine, okay. So a cow is an ox, let's say, is worth $1,000. A sheep, let's say, is worth $100. Fine. So you'll pay a half of $1,000 or a half of $100, respectively. Why are you going down to a quarter of the $100 rather than a half? So that's not really. So the answer is Amar of Huna b'Manoach Mishmeder of Achabar Ika. The reason is the Chachamim made this rule because of the gzera of megadle behema daka. So what does that mean? Rashi has two explanations. Number one is that gzera over here means like the trouble trouble that it takes to raise a small animal. A small animal, a sheep or a goat, it takes a lot more effort to raise it. Well, we said before that when it's a baby it has small teeth, but even when it grows up, it's still a smaller animal. It needs closer care, etc. So therefore, what is it though? So on the one hand, this non-mumcha who was master the bechor, on the one hand he did wrong because now the bechor ended up being shechted and ended up being osur and it has to be buried. On the other hand, he did save the kohen the trouble of raising the animal. The fact of the matter is, again, the kohen, we know there was a chance over here. Not necessarily was the real mumcha going to tell the kohen, you're allowed to shech this animal and eat it. He might have told him, you have to hold on to it still, and you have to continue raising it, and it would be a big tikva, because it might be, maybe it's not a mumkavor. Right? We don't know. Like this, you had a non-mumcha checked it. So if a real mumcha had checked it, he might have said, it's not a mumkavor. Sorry, Mr. Koyan, you still have to continue raising this animal. So in that sense, you can say that this non-mumcha saved the Koyan that possible expenditure. On the other hand, maybe not, because maybe the mumcha would have said that it is. That's why he has to pay a quarter. But that's why we deduct from a half down to a quarter, because on the one hand, we can say he saved him all that bother. The second explanation Rashi says is that you have a gzera that the Chachamim made, which talks about in Bava Kamma, that you're not allowed to raise sheep and goats in Eretz Yisrael except under certain very tightly controlled conditions, because they graze in other people's fields and they damage the crops and then they damage the forest. So according to that,
can you do that?
What do you mean? No, so you're not allowed.
They're not to raise sheep and goats.
So you have certain you have criteria how you can do it. You can have them graze in certain areas like in forests or whatever. You can raise them in your house and feed them. You can whatever. I mean, obviously there was a need for sheep and goats in Eretz Yisrael, the more so because you needed them for carbonus. Fine, but you have rules under which you can raise them, but you can't just raise them where they're gonna wander around and graze freely. Yeah. So the point is, Rashi says, the second explanation is because this person is over on the issue of Megadla Behema Daka, the Eretz Yisrael, so therefore the Chachamim penalized him in the case of sheep and goats and deducted and said instead of the Mazik over here, the non-Mumcha having to pay a half, we reduce it down to a quarter. Because after all, the person himself who's raising this animal is himself doing something wrong. Okay, Rashi says that this is Veloimi Pia Moira. This I didn't hear from my Rebbe. Apparently, I guess Rashi doesn't really like the explanation, maybe because, after all, I mean, what's the Kohen supposed to do? He has the animal, it doesn't have a mum yet. What's he supposed to do with it if not raise it? So, yeah. Okay. Tosfos also prefers Tosfos actually has a bit of a hybrid of the two explanations. Given that there's a gzera, that you can't raise sheep and goats in the settled areas of Eretz Yisrael, you have to take them out to the forest or whatever, so therefore it's a big tircha to raise a sheep or a goat, so therefore Tosfos, just like they were saying before, the reason why with a behema gasta, Tosfos had learned, the reason why you only pay half with a behema gasta is not because of mamon amutal b'safek, but because the chachamim figured out nobody would be willing to pay more than half the value of the animal. Well, with a sheep or a goat, they'd be willing to pay even less, because not only you have the uncertainty whether it's ever going to be mutter to eat, but you also have the tircha of taking it out to the forest to graze. Nobody would pay more than a quarter of its value, and therefore the chum fixed it at that. That's Tosfos's explanation. Okay. Mishnah says, Donas Adin. Now, since we mentioned, so now we're going to digress a little bit. We mentioned that this concept that we have is non-mumcha, was matir b'chur, and therefore we said that he is chayav to pay. So now we're going to digress a little bit to talk about similar concepts in general in halacha where a person paskins and makes a mistake in fact. So the Mishnah says, donas adin, if a person judges a din Torah, zika tachayev v'chiyev atazakai, and he mistakenly declared the one who's liable to be exempt, v'chiyev atazakai, or the other way around, he declares the one who's supposed to be exempt, he declared him liable, timi asatara v'tira asatame, or he mistakenly declared what was supposed to be tahar, he declared tame, or vice versa. Masha asa asui, so the din is, what he did is done, we don't reverse the case, we don't reverse the judgment, we let it stand, the ishalami base, but he has to pay out of pocket to the one who was who decides that? I guess they go to a higher base din. The imhaya mumchal base din, however, if he was a mumchal base din, or mumchal rabbin, says on the side, potter mil shalom, then he's potter from paying. He has judicial immunity, basically. Because, in other words, Rashi says the difference is if he's not a mumcha, then we can tell him, you know what, you're a mazik over here. You're not such an expert in halacha. What were you doing taking this din Torah in the first place?
Okay.
No, in the second case, where he's a mumcha, you can't say to him, what do you mean, why were you judging the din? No, because in the second case, he had the authority to judge. He made a mistake. So actually, though, the truth is, I mean, the Gemara doesn't really get into it in much detail over here, but in Sanhedrin, we had a very long sugya dealing with many different aspects of it, and many different opinions of Amiroyim on the subject, and then you end up with a major machlokas Rishonim, how exactly all of these mesh together. Among other things, the Gemara mentions over there, there's a difference. Was there a greater Talmud Chacham available there to judge or not? That's one factor. Another factor is what kind of mistake was it? The Gemara discussed. We're actually going to mention a little bit of it in the next Mishnah, which is, you have, is it Tav B'Dvar Mishnah or is it B'Shikul Adas? Is it that the mistake he made is something that explicitly says in a Mishnah, or in modern terms that would mean something that it says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch? Or is it something in or Nosa Kalim or whatever? Or is it something in Shikul Andas where the Gemara says over there? Let's say, for example, you have an opinion. You have, let's say, a machlokas of Amiroyim on a particular topic. The halacha has not been officially decided one way or the other, but most people usually follow one opinion. This Dayan followed the other. This Dayan decided to follow the other opinion. That's called Tos B'Shikul Andas. That's called a mistake in deciding logically to accept one view over the other.
Sometimes it's difficult to decide who
right. So that's the point. That's why it has to be sugya de alma as la kavase. The Gemara says there, it would have to be for this purpose. We're not just talking about, let's say, for example, you have you look in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say, for example, you find the Shach says one thing, the Taz says another, and nobody has nobody knows where to go. That's fine. You know, whichever
that's
one. That's not Shikul Adas. Shikul Adas would be if you have, let's say, to pursue this example, let's say you have the Shach and Taz disagree on something. Most Dayanim follow the Shach, let's say. This particular Dayan decides instead he likes the Taz's view and prefers to follow that. That would be an example of Torah B'Shikul Adas. Because the fact is, most Dayanim pass him like the Shach. Okay,
so he should have
passed him like that also. So, yeah.
Like the Rav.
Right. So the Gemara has a long discussion of it in Sanhedrin, how exactly all these various factors mesh together, and the result is that you have many different opinions of Rishonim and Achronim, what exactly.
I mean, it's obvious that when you have a row of opinions in one direction, you cannot follow another.
No, because it hasn't officially been paskin. There's no final authority that says the halacha is like the Shach and nobody should paskin like the Taz. But practically speaking, most Dayanim who judge in this case agree with one side. Okay, so the Gemara says, Le Matnan Stoma Kiramayor, should we say that we have a Stam Mishnah like Rameyor, Dedoin Dina de Garmi, where Rameyor holds, in many places in Shas, in particular we learned about it in Bava Kamma, that he holds that we judge and we make people liable for Dina de Garmi, where he wasn't directly mazik, but it was a bit more indirect. In this case, I'm
Garmi indirect.
So actually, there is a great deal of discussion among Rishonim. What exactly is the difference between the Gemara says in a number of places that groma is potter, but on the other hand, we say that a mayor holds dinner to garmi is chayev. So you have some to show, and we say there's no real difference between them. You have different opinions on the subject. But then we said, yeah, we have in particular, the Ramban wrote a whole kuntras about it called Kuntras Dina Degami, which is one of the major sources that all the later Rishonim and Achronim quote that and deal with what he says, whether to disagree with him or whether to expand on what he says or whatever. His view of the matter is that, among others, that Gami is a more direct causation, and Groma is a more indirect causation.
That's
the way that Ramban understands it, and that's the way many posts can understand it. But yeah, you have other explanations also. Anyway, Gami is more direct.
Right.
Now, on the face of it, over here, the Dayan did not. And let's say, for example, Zikra Tachayev. He didn't literally actually take from Reuven money and give it to Shimon. He just decided the halacha. He says, Reuven, you're obligated to pay X amount to Shimon. That would be an example of Dina Degami. So if we say that he's chayev, that would imply that this Mishnah goes according to the mayor. Because not direct. If he actually took money out of Reuven's hand and gave it to Shimon, and it turned out that was a wrong tax, that would be considered direct hezek. But if he tells Reuven, you are obligated to pay X amount to Shimon, and then Reuven goes and does that, that's gami. It's not direct, it's indirect. It's fairly direct because there's a direct line from his pass to the other guy doing it, but it's not an actual thing where he picked up money from him and gave it to the other. And yet the Mishnah is saying he's obligated to pay. So that would be according to the mayor. So should we?
Gami would say pay the other guy, and Grama
No. Gami would be pay the other guy, right? Grama would be even according to the Ramban anyway. Grama would be even more indirect than that.
Such as what?
Well, no, you wouldn't have an example of it in case of a din tera, let's say. But for example, let's say you have, I don't know, what would be an example of groma. I can't think of an example. But it would be more indirect. You did something which eventually led to something else, which eventually led to damage. Okay, so anyway, so should we say that our Mishnah is a Sam Mishnah like Rav Meir who holds a din degarmi? Because apparently, if you don't hold like Rav Meir, why is the Dayan an our Mishnah chayev? He didn't directly take the money from one to the other. So the Gemara says, Amar Abila Amar Rav, Kigun Shinosav, Anosav Biyad. No, we actually could be talking about in the Mishnah where the Dayan actually took it out of Reuven's hand and gave it to Shimon.
Okay.
So then, that's the point. That therefore he's Chayev. But on the other hand, the Mishnah is saying if he's a Mumchel based, then even then he's Potter.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question is, Bishlema Chiyev at Hazakai. Okay, so I can understand them. Let's look at the scenario in the Mishnah. We had two cases in the beginning. First, where he declared one who was supposed to be innocent, he declared him liable. That was actually the second case.
Yeah,
and then we had the other way around, the Zika at Chayev, that he declared not liable the one who was supposed to be Chayev. So Bishlema Chiyev at Hazakai. That's true. So the Mishnah is saying, Bishlema, I can understand the second case, Chiyev at Hazakai. Where, for example, you have Reuven and Shimon come to Beis Din, let's say, and Reuven says, you owe me 100, and Shimon says, I don't, and or whatever, and the Dayan actually takes money from Shimon and gives it to Reuven, that's direct hezek, and if it turns out later that Shimon was supposed to be, was not supposed to be liable for it, fine, then he's chayev. We mentioned Nosav and Nosav Biyad, we can say that that's what we're talking about, the Dayan picked it up and put it into the other guy's hand. But, El Zika as a chayev, hechidami. So what's the case? Where he said, what's the case? Where Zika is a chayev? What's the case where he exonerates the one who really is liable? Where in our scenario, let's say, so Shimon denies that he owes the 100, and the Dayan paskins in his favor, and later on it turns out he's wrong, and Shimon really does owe the 100, but what's the case? Where you're going to have a direct hezek? If he just says to Shimon, you're Potter, he didn't pick up anything and put it down in the other guy's hand. So again, if we say Dina Degarmi, no problem. But if we're trying to say that all Mishnah can be made to work, even not like Rav Meir, that's Groma for sure, you're Potter. That even Dina Degarmi is Potter. No, in other words, that only if it's direct Hezek would you be Chayev, according to the Chacham. Something that's not direct, even if it's only slightly indirect, like Garmi. Direct hezek. Mazik biyadayim.
You gave a term. I remember you gave me a term.
Okay, it's called biyadayim. He does it with his own hands. Okay. Anyway, so what would be the case? Amar Ravina. So Ravina says, "Kigun shoyu like mashkin v'not lahemenu." You could have a scenario. Let's say, for example, where again you have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven had lent money to Shimon, and he has in his possession a mashkin that Shimon gave him. Now this Dayan says, Shimon, you're potter from paying, and therefore he says to Reuven, okay, I'm going to take the mashkin from you and return it to Shimon because you're not entitled to keep it anymore since Shimon is potter from paying you. So then he actually took something from Reuven, and that, so now it's not Garmi. No, now it's a direct Hezek. He took it from Reuven's hand. Again, Garmi would be, he says to Reuven, for example, you have to pay him. Or he says to Shimon, you have, or yeah, that, or he says to Shimon, Garmi is slightly indirect.
Okay.
Hezek b'Yadayim is I take something from you, for example.
Right.
Hezek shaloi b'Yadayim, you have various kinds of indirect hezek.
Right.
One of them is called Garmi, and according to the Ramban, that means that there's a direct line from what I did to the hezek. However, I didn't do it directly b'Yadayim. I did it indirectly, for example, by telling you to do such and such. In our case, for example, that would mean, let's say, where the Dayan tells Reuven, pay Shimon, and then Reuven goes and does it. He didn't actually take the money out of Reuven's hand and put it in Shimon's hand. That would be Hezek b'Yadayim. But it was Garmi because he told Reuven to do it, and Reuven followed the psak. Reb Meir would be Mechayev for each of them. The Chachamim are not. Rashi, if he told him. Rashi gives another example, by the way. Rashi says, let's say, for example, you have a case like this. And we know you're not allowed to have grain and grapes growing next to each other. If you do and they're not separated, then it's chalayim. And they're also. So let's say, for example, you have a case, you have one person has grapes, the other one has grain, and there's a fence between them. The fence breaks down. So the one of them says to this, the other guy says to the one who owns the fence, put it back up, and he doesn't. Then he causes, it's Garmi, he causes indirectly that the other guy's grain or grapes becomes also. So that's an example of Garmi. The Chachamim would say he's false because he didn't actually do anything to your diet, and he failed to do something.
So
in this case, it happens to be negligence, but again, the Ramban would understand that there's a direct connection between what he did. He didn't put up a fence. Therefore, automatically, the grain and the grapes became also.
Yeah.
As opposed to Grumma, which would be less direct than that.
What would it be, Grumma?
In our case, we don't have, but you have other cases of Grumma.
If he destroyed the fence on purpose, what would it be?
That would probably be Hezek b'Yadayim. No, because then the fence itself is Hezek b'Yadayim. But the fact that the grain and the grapes become also once there's no fence between them after a certain period of time, that is at best Garmi. It's not a direct.
If you break the fence, same thing.
No, but it'd be a dime for the fence itself. I don't know that you could say that the issue of the grain and the grapes comes about because the fence is missing over there. It's still more of a Garmi thing. Okay, anyway, the point is, only Reb Meir holds a dinner to Garmi.
Right.
So again, we're trying to make our Mishnah work, even not like Reb Meir.
Right.
So again, when he's chiyuv as a zakai would be that he took money from somebody who wasn't supposed to have had to pay it. He actually took it out of his hand. That would be Hezek b'Yadayim. Fine, you can make him chiyuv for that. But how do you have zikra as a chiyuv? So the answer is, Omer Rabinik, Venturi Le Mashkin, Menotla Himenu. Suppose that he says to Shimon, who really was supposed to have been liable to pay, he says to him, you're potter, and then he turns to Reuven and says, listen, you still have his mashkin in your possession. Now that I decided that Shimon is potter from paying you, then you have to, then I'm going to take the mashkin from you and give it back to Shimon. And later on, it turns out he's wrong. So he actually took, that'd be a dying, exactly. Everybody would agree he's chayav for that. So if he only told Reuven to give back the mashkin, only the mayor, that's down to you. The mayor would say he's chayav, the chum would say he's potter. But if he actually took it out of Reuven's hand, yeah. Similarly, Timei Es HaTohar, how do we have a case where a person mistakenly declared Tomei something that's Tohar? Again, if we say not like Reb Meir, if we say like Reb Meir, no problem. It can just mean he declared it Tomei, therefore it's Garmi, because now the guy considers it Tomei. But if we say that it has to be the Adayim, according to the Chacham, how would that be? The Aga Buhu Sheret, that would be, let's say, the Dayan actually took and touched a Sheret to it. So somebody came to the Dayan of the Shaila, is this fruit of Truma or what have you, is it Tomei or Toher under this scenario? The Dayan says that it is Tomei. And to buttress his opinion, he says, just in case it wasn't really Tomei yet, I'm going to actually make it Tomei now. And he picks up a dead Sheret and touches it to it. So therefore, now that's b'yadayim. Because if it turns out that he was mistaken, then he actually damaged it b'yadayim. Here, it's a tomei, and what would be the opposite, where he declares something that should have been tomei, he mistakenly Tohar. Declared tohar. What's the direct hezek there? Would be she'irvon and peroitzef. Suppose that he mixed it up with other peiros with other produce of the guy who came to ask the shayla. So therefore, now when it turns out that the original one was Tomei, he calls that the other fruit also became Tomei. It turns out he made the other fruit Tomei as well, and therefore it's direct hezek. Therefore, it's biyadayim, and therefore it's chayim.
He makes it physically?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Irvan imperi,
so biyadayim.
Biyadayim. Okay.
So anytime, basically any time it's physical, it's biyadayim.
Then it's definitely biyadayim. Everybody would agree. if it's only garmi, if it's only, for example, verbally, Rav Meir would say it's chayim, Rav Meir would say it's chayim, v'chom would say it's chayim. The halacha is like Rav Meir, by the way, in that. The halacha is like Rav Meir, the doyin din of the garmi. Okay. And the Mishnah continues, it happened once, we had this in Sanhedrin as well, in connection with this whole business about mistakes in halacha. It happened once with a cow, that its womb, its uterus, had been surgically removed, and there came with a shayla, is it kosher or not? And Reb Tarfon paskin that it is not. The hechiler Reb Tarfon the klovim, and Reb Tarfon said, and Reb Tarfon declared that it was treifa and fed it to dogs. It's treifa, only dogs can eat. Ubam ma'isa lufnei chachamim b'yavne. But then the case was brought to the chachamim in Yavne, v'hitiruha, and they declared it mutter on the ground that the omar todos harofe, that todos the doctor said, ein pora v'chazira yotzim Alexandria shemitzrayim, there's no cow or female pig that comes out of Alexandria in Egypt, she'ein choitzchina ein shalah, that they don't first cut out its womb, v'shvil shalei telet, so it doesn't give birth, because they had very good quality cattle and very good quality pigs in Egypt. They didn't want them to be exported into other countries where they could breed them over there, so therefore they would sterilize them first, they would do a hysterectomy on them first. The point is, that these animals would still continue to survive after that long term. So therefore, Todos HaRofe says, obviously, then that demonstrates that taking out the uterus is not fatal. It's not, doesn't make it a treifa. Well, obviously. So therefore, so it turns out that the animal is not treifa. It turns out, therefore, that Reb Tarfon's sack was mistaken. Reb Tarfon, hocha chamorcha Tarfon. So Reb Tarfon says, what? So Reb Tarfon says, there goes your donkey, Tarfon. You've lost your donkey, in other words, because I'm going to have to sell my donkey in order to pay back the guy whose cow I declared treifa. By the way, Makoshin points out, Reb Tarfon actually was quite rich. It's not like he would have to, it's not like he's down to his last donkey. So you have a couple of different explanations why he says it this way. One explanation, Ben Yehoyada says, he's saying, usually I always ride everywhere on a donkey, but now I'm Davka going to sell this my donkey, even though I could pay him using other things, in order that I'll always remember to be more careful in Paskin and Halacha. Okay. However, Amar Lo Rabbi Akiva. However, Rabbi Akiva says that's not necessary. Reb Tarfon Atam Mumcha. It's not necessary to pay back the guy. Reb Tarfon Atam Mumcha LeBeistin. You are Mumcha LeBeistin. You have the expertise in halacha. You have the right to pass in halacha because you have smicha. V'chol Mumcha LeBeistin. And when somebody is a mumcha who's been certified by Beistin, potter mele shalom. Then, as we said in the previous mission, he's potter from pain.
How come he didn't know that? That's surprising.
Okay. Well, actually, the Gemara points out, but typically, why does Reb Tarfon have to mention the fact that he's a Mumcha LeBeistin? Shouldn't we have another reason why Reb Tarfon is Potter? We should be able to say that he's Potter on the ground, the Tav in Bar Mishnah, because Reb Tarfon made a mistake and forgot something that it says in an explicit Mishnah. We learned in Kulin that if the womb of an animal is removed, it's not Shefer. Now, it's true that Mishnayos didn't exist as we have them now in a Tarfon's time, but still you had collections of Mishnayos that were available that eventually Rebbe incorporated. Yeah. So, no, not necessarily written down, but still they were available among the Chachamim. Some of the Mephoshim explain also that since we have Todos HaRofe's statement, that amounts to Tav in Dvar Mishnah. He's stating a fact, and therefore, so if Tarfon was unaware of that fact, then it's Tav in Dvar Mishnah.
Why the statement of HaRofe impacting halacha?
Because we accept that. He knows what he's talking about.
No,
he's saying how they do things in Egypt, but we understand from that anywhere else the same thing applies. But in general, in a number of areas of halacha, we accept medical, we accept what doctors say. As far as feeding a person on Yom Kippur, for example, we go according to... You have cases with it. Anyway, so he's Tav in Dvar Mishnah, and the Tav in Dvar Mishnah Choyzer, and the rule, as we learned in Sanhedrin, is that if the Dayan made a mistake in something that it says explicitly in a Mishnah, then Choyzer, then you undo the Psak and start all over. So in that case, in other words, it amounts to that. So it amounts to, therefore, if the parah still existed, you would be able to be matur. It wouldn't be like we said before. Wouldn't be the parah remains also, and therefore you have to reimburse the guy. Here, the parah would have still been matur. The fact that it was since then fed to dogs is not Reb Tarfon's problem. So why is Reb Akiva telling him, because you're a mumcha lebeistin, therefore you're potter, he should be potter because the judgment would have been reversible.
It depends.
Well,
if they didn't give it to the dog.
No, because the point is, the fact that the guy afterwards gave it to the dog, when we say that, we don't mean the person himself threw it to the dog. We mean the owner threw it to the dog. Fine, that's his problem. It was a case of Tobid by Mishnah, and therefore the person should be potter on those grounds alone, because if the cow still existed, if the guy had been patient and waited until we got a second opinion, then he would still have his cow.
If he had to wait for a second opinion after a tough and gave that
opinion. Okay, but still,
that's
the concept. Tobid Ram Mishnah Choyzer. So why is your Tarifim liable? That should be more of a matter of grama. The answer is Choda V'od Karma. You're right. Rabbi Akiva is actually saying 2 points. Choda, the Tobid Ram Mishnah Choyzer. Number one, Rabbi Tarifim, you're anyway potter because of the Tobid Ram Mishnah. And for that reason alone, the judgment is reversible, and therefore you're not liable if the guy hurried up and executed it. And not only that, inami the shikul adas teisa. Even if it hadn't been dry mishnah, even if it had been a matter of shikul adas, like we said, where you have opposing opinions, but you have most dayanim paskin like one, and he instead paskin like the other. Where then the rule would be, as we said in the previous mishnah, masha also yivishalim ibeisas. The judgment then is not reversible, but the dayan has to pay out of pocket. But in that case, Rabbi Akiva says, even in this case, even if that had been the case over here, that wouldn't matter in your case because mumchala based in Atta, because you're mumchala based in b'chol mumchala based in potter malashan. So Rabbi Akiva is not saying Rabbi Akiva is telling Rabbi Tarifin there are actually 2 reasons you should be potter. Number one, the mistake itself with Targum Mishnah, it's a reversible mistake, and number two, whether it's even if it's not reversible, as a mumchala based in, you have judicial immunity because you have the right to paskin because you have the right to paskin.
With that reasoning, then. Line of logic, they won't pay attention to what they're paskening.
Because when a person is a mumchala based in, that means that based in is certified that they're going to be careful about paskening halacha, that they know what they're talking about.
Well, apparently.
Okay, so in this case, fine, a person can still make a mistake, but nevertheless, he has that judicial immunity where he's potter from paying, because again, the only reason to make the guy be chayav to pay is because we could tell him that, look, you're a mazik, you have no business judging when you're not the most qualified, but if he is the most qualified, then yeah, he's the most qualified.
It wouldn't work for doctors.
I don't know if it works for doctors. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Maybe actually there would be falsehood in a similar case. I don't know.
There would be falsehood.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure. All right.